Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey everybody, welcome to HR Latte. This is Rayanne Thorne, your host. And HR Latte is brought to you by Dovetail Software. If you want to check it out, case management solution for HR departments as well as employee engagement. Oh, that's all the rage today, talking about employee engagement. And what I want to talk about in the future is how employment branding, how talent acquisition impacts employee engagement. For today, however, we are continuing our series on healthcare HR today. And to that end, I've invited Blake Moser, who's a wonderful recruiter based out in Texas. He's going to tell us a little bit more about what he does and why we should listen to him. Hey, Blake, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Rayanne, thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
It's great to have you, Blake. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and then give us, a little bit more than the elevator pitch of medicalrecruiting.com?
Absolutely. So about myself, recruiting has been my career. I started right out of high school into sales and then returned to college as I was building out my recruiting firm. I now have a master's in human resource development. So organizational development, adult learning are passions of mine, and they dovetail really nicely into recruitment. So medicalrecruiting.com has been a journey for us I have been in business for myself since 2006, started in recruiting in actually 2001, but in 2006, we honed in on healthcare because of the consistency that we were seeing in growth there, the hiring demands that we saw, and the success that we were having in healthcare, and ultimately became medicalrecruiting.com to own the space. We're a nationwide recruiting firm that recruits all kinds of positions as it relates to healthcare, with the cornerstone of that being the healthcare providers.
Awesome. Well, that's a lengthy career. We often hear about recruiters coming in and maybe lasting 2 years. So what do you attribute to your longevity in the space?
I have a passion for this industry. It called to me. Recruiting found me. I believe that with recruiting, the way I found my passion is that I don't believe that there's another industry where a single transaction, that being the placement of a person in a job for us, has as a positive impact in multiple factors. One being the large economy, we help companies grow. Two, we help families and people in their career path, but particularly in healthcare, when we place someone in a role, we're delivering healthcare. And that provider is seeing sometimes in the upwards of 30 patients a day. And so the role that I play impacts not just the larger the economy, the person that's filling the position and their family, but also the patients that they see day in and day out. And when we've done that over and over again over years, I feel like really that we're making a big impact. So that part of it drives me. It motivates me. I see it as a mission in my life. And so I've persevered through the down times.
Right.
I'm a problem solver at heart. And anytime I saw a challenge with the economy or how we could grow or become more efficient, we adapted to that. And so I enjoy that part of the business.
Well, that's one of the hardest parts is enduring the downturns in the economy, keeping going. I mean, there were many people that left recruiting right when you were starting off, right? In 2006,
yes.
when you shifted and launched your own business. 2007, 2008 was a horrible year for recruiters, for sales, for software. Anything that had been experiencing growth all of a sudden was no longer experiencing growth, but experiencing the lack of growth and actually recession.
That's right.
So how do you keep going? Is that just something that's in you that says, okay, this is a challenge and I'm up for the challenge, so I'm going to fight back and do whatever I need to do. We mentioned earlier, before we went on the air, the phrase strategery, and so I'm guessing that has a lot to do with how you've been able to stay in the forefront of your career and hiring not only for your clients, but you have a growing organization yourself. So is it that resiliency? Is it that strategery that's allowed you to just keep moving forward and experiencing the growth that you have?
Yes, I believe so. I believe it. Some of it is being at the right place at the right time, and some of it is that strategic plan that you put in place to be able to have an advantage compared to your competition. So in that, I find my story, my history, the journey that we've been on, and how we even honed in on recruiting. 2008, you mentioned, was a terrible year. Leading up to 2008, we were in healthcare and oil and gas engineering. We did a lot of engineering. Those projects were being put on hold as the Bush administration was ending. Unemployment was at an all-time high. But what we experienced is, though the engineering side of our business was failing, there was a consistent growth happening in healthcare. And at the time, we were serving healthcare in a very focused niche, was the advanced practice providers, nurse practitioners and physician assistants. My firm, the Advanced Practice Recruiters, was one of the first firms to really hone in on that area of healthcare. And so from 2008 to 2012, it experienced a 500% growth increase nationwide in hiring demand for nurse practitioners and PAs. And the reason why is healthcare organizations were looking at delivering healthcare in a more affordable manner, as well as they just couldn't find the physicians to fill the positions. And so the closest thing that they could do was go to the talent pool with nurse practitioners and physician assistants. So that allowed me to persevere through that lull economy of 2008. And it was partly strategic. We saw the growth happening there. We were looking at the statistics that the government was putting out, but also what was happening around recruitment buzz, and even some of the content that you were putting out there at the time helped us put together our plan on what technologies we could leverage to beat the competition, fill the positions quicker, and be better at recruiting than what our clients and our competitors were able to do. So one of the things that I have seen consistently throughout through recruiting is that recruiting constantly is struggling to find a competitive advantage. We hear common things like, we provide the best candidates to the best companies and the best talent for the best jobs, and really that's pretty shallow. And so what we've been able to do is say, here are the data points. We fill X number of positions by this time frame. We're able to reduce your hiring time frame by a number of days, weeks, and months. And when it comes to seeing patients, it's multifaceted. You have a provider in front of a patient. If you don't have a provider in front of a patient, you're losing money, and your quality of healthcare diminishes. So we looked at it in healthcare. Ultimately, our client's goal was delivering high-quality healthcare. And the only way they were able to continue to do that is if we were able to provide the people that they needed. And so we provide a critical service for healthcare companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And so before making this focus or deciding to focus on healthcare, on medical recruiting, you had opportunity to be part of the general practice of recruiting. So what has been the main difference that you've seen between hiring in healthcare and hiring in the general world, if you will?
Right. So healthcare is different in that a lot of the positions that we work with, though they're high-level positions, such as physicians, they're very technical. So a lot of it comes down to semantics of board certification, certain types of training, certain types of procedures. They do that in their profession day in and day out. Unlike, say, a manager role where you could take a skill set and move into a different industry and apply that skill set, with providers, that skill set remains consistent throughout their career. You commit to practicing family medicine your entire career, or orthopedic surgery your entire career. So then it becomes, in recruiting, you know the person can do the job based upon their background, their skills, and their education. What becomes difficult in recruiting in healthcare is simply having the numbers to meet the demand. The talent pool is too small. And then knowing the details of what board certifications are necessary, navigating the state licensing and the differences between the 50 states and how they're licensed, either with the medical board or nursing board, and then what kinds of procedures they actually do. So I think it's very technical, and it would probably closely translate to those that are in technology and,
sure,
and coding in particular programs. I would say they probably experience a similar recruitment process as us. You're looking for these people with a very technical skill set.
I can remember 10, 15 years ago when I was recruiting in healthcare, there was this push to teach nurses and doctors business strategy, because when they went to school, they didn't learn anything about business. You know, they went to learn about providing healthcare and taking care of patients and providing a service, but had no idea how to conduct business. And USC and several other medical schools here on the West Coast were actually offering business courses for professionals that worked within healthcare and within the medical industry. And now we're seeing a shift from business more toward technology. Now we're teaching healthcare professionals a little bit more about technology. You know, there was the absolute shift from going paperless, right, 10 years ago when most hospitals said, we're not going to carry a chart anymore unless it's living on an iPad or living in a computer in each of the rooms or in the nursing stations or wherever within the healthcare facility. So it's interesting to see those shifts that happen within the industry,
yes,
and how you, as a professional serving this industry, have to carry on with those shifts and know who you're talking to and what they know, because not everybody knows the same thing. So I'm guessing you have to stay up on your own practice and improve and grow and change. So with that, I know that you made an exciting new hire at your organization recently. Can you tell us about that? And then let's expound a little bit upon the growth that you're hoping to experience in the next year or so.
Okay, sure. So in the last 2 years, we've grown from a team of 3 to a team of 14. So we've experienced large growth for us in the history of our company. And
absolutely,
we're on a path to grow. Hopefully, the plans are, the next 6 months, be a team of 20 focused on healthcare. When we were building out our model, our model is largely a split desk model where we have account managers and recruiters and a researcher. We just recently added a physician researcher that their job duties are going to include networking, social media, but also data management. We have access to multiple points of contacts within healthcare, and managing that large data becomes a burden for any one person. So the physician researcher will be responsible for keeping that data up to date and getting the right data to the right recruiter when we have an open position, so that we can then drill through that data and find the person that's on the move, ready to take the position. So this physician researcher is a new role, and we feel like it's a cornerstone role of being able to have a built pipeline for particular positions before we even receive the job order for that role, so that we can fill the position very quickly. Our ultimate goal, the reason why we're focused on this with physicians, is that we have seen over the last 2 years, us being able to reduce the average placement time frame from job opening to fill, going from about 90 days down to about 3 weeks.
Wow.
We hope to do that on the physician side of things. And if we do, we see it as a huge disruption in the marketplace, because
yes,
many physician positions go on open for 6 months to a year. Right now, It's about an average of 8 months opening for a physician opening. So we feel that if we replicate our model that we've done with some of these other healthcare positions with physicians, we know we have the data in-house to do so. We just need to manage that data a little bit more effectively so that we can reduce that hiring time frame. We think that that is going to be that's the biggest opportunity on the table for us right now.
Wow. That's exciting. So what's the most important skill set for this researcher position that you just filled?
The most important skill set for this role is understanding the technical side of it. As I mentioned, what kind of education, training, certifications are necessary for these positions, because if you look at the data, what we want to do is segment that data into to roles that they can actually do the position. So you have to know the difference between a sports medicine orthopedic surgeon or a sports medicine family practice physician. You'll need to know the difference between neurology and neurosurgery. Those are things that this person's going to need to know in managing the data. So that part's important. The other part, I would say, is soft skills, the networking, using technologies that are going to allow this person to reach out to physicians, make
right.
connections in the marketplace, mainly like social networking. So
we're
going to be leveraging, obviously, traditional tools like LinkedIn and newcomers in the physician space like Doximity to make sure that we're having ongoing conversations with the marketplace.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you in about a year from now, because I would love to see the impact that this new role has had on your practice and how it's changed how you fill positions. Maybe time to hire is reduced. Let's hope so. I know that that was always the most difficult part to manage was expectations for the client in how soon you would have somebody there joining the organization as a new employee, whether it's a physician or a CNA. You know, it matters a great deal to the organization when you set expectations that you live up to them. So it'll be interesting to follow this path.
It's very important because it's multifaceted. It helps our organization, obviously, with cash flow. But what we have found as we've reduced the time to hire, employers remain engaged. They actually hire our candidates. They don't change plans and move on or fill the positions internally or with our competition. So we're filling a higher percentage of the positions that we represent as the reduction of time frame happens. So that's important. Also on the candidate side, they're not as distracted with other job opportunities through that time period. If we're able to get them into the position quickly, the timing works out well for everyone. So it's a big win-win when that happens.
Well, that sounds like a very exciting next 6 to 12 months at your organization, and I know that you're looking to hire even more throughout the next year. So we'll have to set a show for you to come back and give us an update and let us know how it is going for your organization. Let's absolutely do it, because I'm really interested in this. Obviously, people who know me and have listened to the show before know that I have a special place in my heart for healthcare recruiting, healthcare hiring. According to you and what you see and what's coming across in your practice, Blake, what is the most pressing issue for healthcare hiring today? You know, 10 years ago it was a nursing shortage, right? So what seems to be the most pressing issue today?
Well, you know, in healthcare, that system has been broken for a long time. And
right.
there are huge committees having that same conversation about different things. So for us on the hiring side, what I see happening is, obviously, we know as recruiters, we talk about the talent workforce is aging and how there's a skills gap
there
between the baby
yeah.
boomers and the Gen Y. Well, in healthcare, that fact is impacting healthcare, because you have this aging population that's now, as they age, they need healthcare more. So they're seeking out healthcare services. Well, if you couple with that in that the healthcare talent is also aging and exiting the workforce, there's not as many people to supply the healthcare delivery. So that is a major breakdown. There's a higher demand for services, but yet a smaller supply for services. So that is something that we've known for a number of years, and it's going to continue to escalate up to about 2020 is the tipping point.
Okay.
And then the Gen Y will start filling into the talent position so that they can deliver the health care. But we have also seen that the Affordable Health Care Act has given access to more patients to health care. It's also reduced the amount of billings for healthcare organizations. So healthcare organizations also have a greater demand for healthcare, but they're making less money per visit.
Yeah.
So they have to revisit their business model and how they deliver healthcare to be able to see the patients and still make a profit. So those are it's a multifaceted thing. When it comes down to recruiting, well, you have huge demand, but where's the supply to deliver that healthcare demand?
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, it doesn't matter, because I did work for nonprofit and for-profit organizations, and it doesn't matter when it comes down to whatever you're classified as. You still need to make a profit and need to put money back into the business and for growth, for the opportunity to be able to see more patients and get them in and out, less time, less bedtime. You know, all of these things factor in to the job that you're doing. And I'm wondering the impact that it has had on relationships between you, an outsourced third-party recruitment firm. How is there a difference now today than there was in 2006? How you communicate with the organization? Is leadership more involved with you? Are they less involved? Are you dealing directly with HR? It used to be that third-party recruiters used to work directly with the hiring managers. But we know that 10,
right.
15 years ago, HR became the more and more the point of contact. So what are you seeing
right.
today? Has that shifted completely and you're dealing directly with HR departments? Are there still times when you're working with a hiring manager or perhaps even a CEO?
It depends on the size of the organization and the culture of that organization, how they view third-party recruiters. The larger healthcare systems have in-house recruiters,
right.
and those in-house recruiters are clients of mine. We have successful relationships with those in-house recruiters. A large organization like that, it's a different, completely different dynamic than a small physician practice that may have 10 employees and they're adding their
right.
next provider. And in that case, the smaller organization, I'm working directly with the decision maker, sometimes the physician that also owns the practice or
okay.
the practice administrator, people that are actually going to be interviewing the job seeker and making the hiring decision, and we're involved through that entire process. Larger healthcare organizations, our first point of contact is oftentimes the internal recruiter, maybe not even the HR person, just the recruiter. And then the recruiter is getting multiple points of contact for hiring. So there's multiple hiring managers involved. Politics plays a big role in healthcare, especially with large organizations. So you'll have three physicians of a particular specialty interviewing the fourth one that might come in, because it's going to impact all three of theirs, call schedule, patient, the patient population, and so you may have one candidate going through a recruiter to then schedule with three different physicians and perhaps a clinical manager. It becomes breakdown in the systems. The bureaucracy is much thicker with larger organizations.
Right.
So what I've seen with large organizations, they have made moves in the right direction in bringing on internal recruiters and focusing on creating the educational and training programs in-house, because they have found that if they can train in-house, those providers are likely to stay within the system and provide healthcare services within that system. And so in some ways that cuts out the third-party recruiter. However, I think in our business model, they train them, and then another organization wants them. So then we become the third party that they need to attract
right.
that person. So I'm an opportunist at heart.
There you go.
I look at the opportunity here, And there's enough demand out there nationwide in healthcare that if one system feels they've become self-sufficient, there's three more systems trying to get that talent from that system, and we're the ones delivering it. So even though there's bureaucracy to navigate with the large healthcare systems, there's large opportunity there. I particularly like to work with the smaller organizations that don't have internal recruiting departments or HR departments, and they truly need to outsource this. So they're looking at us as the expert, someone that they can outsource this process to, and they rely on us as the expertise in the market. So we're able to have a greater impact on that smaller organization. I find that to be much more fun than just following a set of standards and regulations that a larger healthcare organization has.
So let's talk a little bit about the change in your practice since you first started as a recruiter. I'm guessing when you first started working in recruitment, there was still quite a bit of paper involved, a paper trail, you know, information on paper about the candidates, information on paper about the client, about the organization, benefits packages, everything was on paper. Have you gone paperless? Has your practice gone paperless?
We're I would say 90% paperless. Really, any company interactions between our team members is paperless. Our candidate tracking system, our ATS, is paperless. We're obviously communicating electronically. We hardly print resumes or recruiting agreements and contracts. All of that's electronic. The only thing that I would say is paper is we have some team members that prefer to take notes on paper, and so they'll refer back to their notes and transfer those notes into the ATS. But that's the only thing that remains on paper.
You know, I remember loving to write notes and hating the sound of the keyboard when I was on the phone, right? You know, but it was so much easier than having to transcribe those notes on, you know. So hopefully, as software improves, we can just click a button and it will record and automatically transcribe what we're saying. I'm sure that there's that technology out there now.
Certainly. And, and the way I use my ATS is I'm having a conversation, I'm typing the notes into my ATS. And so we obviously, our ATS parses resumes and helps us organize data. And so it is largely electronic based. And I've always been an early adopter of technology, so much so that we haven't had business cards for quite some time. We had a couple of events recently where some of my team members said, we need to get printed business cards. So we've just recently printed some business cards because I'm anti-paper. My thought even with business cards is if I hand a business card to someone, it's going in their desk drawer or their trash can. What I would rather do.
In my desk, right? I think of what I do with that kind of thing, and I'm looking at a pile here, a pile there. As I look around my office, you know, I just have piles of them. It's not like I'm putting them into a Rolodex or I'm inputting them into my own personal I've already connected with these people via LinkedIn, right?
Or I have
their email contact information inputted into my computer where I can easily access it. So it is interesting.
I have
worked for a couple of different organizations that said we're no longer printing business cards, and then others were, we need them. We need to have that impression. That's still our brand, you know, pressing the flesh. That's what we need to have, is something, a hard piece of information to pass along. So I don't know that business cards are going away just yet, but I tend to agree with you. They don't do anything but sit on your desk, and unless you connect a face to it. I'm looking at one right now from somebody that I must have met at a marketing conference about 2 months ago, and I have no idea who it is. Right? I have no idea who that card belongs to. So not a lasting impression there. So there are other ways create an impression.
Right. What I've done when I'm traveling or I'm networking someone says, oh, do you have a business card? I'll say, no, but I'd be glad to text you my contact information and share the contact there. And then I'll connect with them on LinkedIn. So that's what we do as recruiters. If I can go find a candidate on LinkedIn, then I can certainly go find any point of contact and connect with them there. Then it becomes a lasting impression. So that's been our view. We're largely electronic based, and even my clients, you know, with the Affordable Health Care Act came the transition of health care from paper records to
totally.
Required
to
be on
yep.
electronic medical records, EHR, EMR. And so
they drug their
feet
for a long time on that. They did not. I mean, that's been something that's been talked about for 15 years. And so healthcare has
yeah.
just been really dragging their feet about. My mom had surgery in Vegas just 2 years ago, and I could not believe that everything was still on paper. You know, when
right.
we went to check out, there were paper records everywhere, and it was a complete mess. I couldn't believe it. And I thought, okay, we're not coming back to this hospital, because if their records
yes.
look like this, that makes me a little nervous. So, do you
that's
remember the sound
right.
of the fax machine, Blake? Did you ever have a fax machine in your office, or are you too young to remember that?
We did. No, I mean, I started in recruiting in 2001. I am
okay.
one of those recruiters that did. I called off a list, a printed
okay.
list, by the way, and made notes.
Fax
and, you know, I have faxed resumes and contracts, so I do
yeah.
remember that. Now we do have a fax number, but we receive it electronically, and we sign
sure.
it, you know, through EchoSign and some of the other electronic signature services. But yes, I do remember the sound of the fax machine, and
I often
I'm
say
one
that's
of
like
those
the best sound in the world. You know, when a resume would come in, everybody's eyes would open wide, and everybody would run to see whose candidate it was, right? Who's sending the resume?
Right.
So what are you doing any social recruiting? I know you talked about networking becoming a more important part of the practice. Are you using any social technologies to recruit or to source?
Absolutely. We started social recruiting years ago, as soon as it was available, 2008, 2009. Some of our Twitter accounts were established way back then. We use social media to curate content for the particular audience that we're trying to reach. So we oftentimes, if you find medical recruiting on social media, you might find it's tailored towards healthcare. We do a little bit towards HR and recruiting, but we break that down into physicians or nurse practitioners or physician assistants. So we have a Twitter account for physician assistants where we'll share information related to physician assistants. And we kind of look at social media and social media marketing as any kind of marketing. You need to segment your audience and communicate relevant information to that audience. So we do that by curating content and segmenting it to the right audience. So we have multiple Twitter accounts and Facebook pages, and we do find LinkedIn to be helpful with networking. LinkedIn does not have near the reach in healthcare is what it does in other industries, but it's growing. And then one newer tool in the marketplace is Doximity, which was Doximity focuses just on physicians. Physicians think they're special, so they have to have a special social network, and that's Doximity right now.
They are very
and
special.
Doximity was built by one of the co-founders of LinkedIn and the founder of Epocrates, which is apps for healthcare information. So they're on the right track, and they've created some HIPAA compliant. I'm giving them a plug here, but they've created some HIPAA compliant messaging systems that attract doctors to use the system for more than just reading an article or socializing with other physicians. It's becoming more of a business tool. So we're using Doximity for the purpose of networking, and that's kind of where it's headed in healthcare. But
so
yes,
they
embraced
let you in
social media
the social
a long time
network?
Ago.
No problem. They let you in even though you're a recruiter into the social network, or did you crash it?
No, we don't. We did not hack the system.
Okay.
we're not pretending to be a doctor.
Okay.
Neither one of those is happening. They don't let us socialize as a doctor would
okay.
on the system.
But
so
you can search
you buy a recruiter's seat, and that gives
okay.
you so many messages
okay.
and job opportunities and that kind of thing. So it's a little different, but it is a.
Pretty interesting. I'm looking at it right now. So it's Doximity, Doximity. They are touting over 400,000 verified physician members. That's fantastic. I would have loved this back in 2001.
Yes. Fantastic. It's a system that's been in place for a couple of years, and their reach has grown. And I think that they're doing some unique things when it comes to social media and how social media can relate to recruiting. I think they're on the right track in healthcare. Yeah. I think LinkedIn obviously has done a great job. And I think that really when you own the data, you own the industry. They're obviously trying to own the data with physicians. I think the other social network that's doing a good job of that is Facebook. I think Facebook gives its users a reason to visit the site.
Absolutely.
And they have more data than anyone else. So we find in social recruiting, we actually find more success with Facebook than even LinkedIn or Twitter.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So our time, I knew, would go very fast. So as we look to wrap up the show today, any last words of wisdom for our listeners as we finish out this month? I have one more guest on Monday that will finish out our month on healthcare HR today. But any last words of advice?
I'll give you my formula for recruiting as my last piece
that.
Of advice. And I look at recruiting as really having three ingredients, and that being project management, marketing, and sales. Project management is that you've got a project. You need to fill the position on time and under budget, and if you can improve on that by decreasing the time and reducing the cost, then you become more competitive. Marketing is segmenting your audience and reaching the right audience with the right message at the right time. And then sales, that part's never going away. Recruiting is a high touch personal industry. We've got to be problem solvers. We have to help people, educate them, and lead them to the right opportunity. So I'll leave you with that.
I love that. That is a perfect last words of wisdom. Project management, marketing, and sales, and it is sales. We don't need to hit that argument. But I always wrap up my show with my favorite part, Blake, which is my quick hit fave list. And I call this my favorite part because it's the selfish part for me. It's my opportunity to learn a little bit more about you and new things that I might want to try. So do you have a favorite food?
I love all kinds of food, but one thing that I really enjoy right now are Perfect bars. They're almond butter based, and there's different ones with like dried cranberries or coconut, but Perfect bars sustain me.
Where do you get those at? Whole Foods or where do
you? I think Whole Foods has them. You can visit perfectbars.com.
Oh, online?
And
okay.
Yes, and it will have the retailers that you can purchase from. So I buy it from my local grocery store, but I think Whole Foods hasn't.
I will
love LaCroix sparkling water, particularly the coconut flavor. So those are my two things right now.
That sounds incredible. I love the Kind bars, the that have no all natural ingredients and everything. And so I'll have to check out the Perfect bars and the LaCroix. Sparkling water, is that what
sparkling
you said?
Sparkling water,
How do you spell that? LaCroix?
Yes, it's L-A and then C-R-O-I-X.
That's LaCroix. What I thought. LaCroix, okay. And do you have a favorite book that you can share with us? Now, this could be something that has been like your book for your life, or it could be like something you read years ago that had impact, maybe something you're reading now, something new?
Sure, my favorite book is Facebook.
Oh,
I like that book. That's the one I spend the most time with. The reality is that there's two books that have remained constant in my life outside of my faith with the Bible, obviously, but two other books. Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. It's just solid content, and so many people, reference that book, but I really do find great content there. And then Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, I think is a great book. Even if you're not Christian by faith, I believe that book has some really strong philosophical components to it. So I enjoy both of those books.
And your favorite place? This could be a room in your home. It could be a park by your home. It could be a remote location.
That's an easy answer. So I've got a hot tub. Hot tub next to my pool in my courtyard, and I get to look up in the stars. And so I, at night, I go to my hot tub, and it's my like place to work through my thoughts. That is my favorite place for sure.
That sounds incredible. And then last but not least, your favorite thing to do, is it still the hot tub?
No, my favorite thing to do is obviously spend time with family. I have a 7-year-old daughter. Her birthday is this weekend, so we're having a big birthday party tomorrow, and I have a 4-year-old daughter as well. And my wife and I, we were high school sweethearts. We started dating when I was 15. I'm 35 now. So our family is what's core, and I enjoyed spending time with them. So when I'm not recruiting, I'm literally like at cheerleading practice and spending time with my family. So that's
wonderful, Blake. Thank you so much for joining me today on HR Latte. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Hey, Leanne, anytime. I appreciate it. Always love our conversation.
Well, I'm going to pick you up on that. We're gonna have you back in a year from now. We're going to talk about the changes in your practice, and we'll talk about the growth and what worked. Maybe some things didn't work, and you can share some advice.
No, it's going to work. We're going to talk about how we disrupt the physician market.
Love that. Right. Great attitude. Great attitude. Thanks again for being here today.
Thank you so much, Rayanne. Goodbye.
We'll be back on Monday at 10:30 Pacific time, which makes it 1:30 Eastern time. I'm going to be speaking with Dan White, who is the president of Workforce Solutions at AMN Healthcare, formerly at IBM. I look forward to that conversation. I'll hope you will join me as I wrap up this series on Healthcare HR Today. Thanks again for joining me today on HR Latte.